I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars. And this week, Johnny has a Lada Niva confession. Let me ask you a question. Do you want your car to look worse?
No, I mean, I'm guessing no is the obvious answer.
No, I mean, do you want it to look, even though maybe it's brand new or nearly new, do you want it to look like absolute gash?
Hang on, are you pretending to be a YouTuber? I've just bought a new car and I've just realised that I don't like the colour or the spec that I've ordered it in.
Yeah. So I'm going to completely change it, even though I spent ages asking you guys what it was going to be like. No, the reason I say it's just I just wondered, you know, perhaps if you wanted your car to look like an absolute load of pig cock, simply fit it with some gel plates.
Oh!
The instant and easy way to make your car look significantly worse.
Well, is...
Why do people bother with those fucking plates? They're terrible.
The bubble raised letter.
Yeah, but not resin, proper raised letters resin. Like plates sort of from the 70s where there was some shaping to the letters.
Yes.
These are just
this is
flat
bubble.
But raised letters.
Well, see, there's a, like you say, there's a class to a pressed metal plate, of which I'm a big fan. I have pressed metal plates on a lot of my cars, including I'm actually just ordering a pair for the Jimny. So, and I recommend a pair for your Defender. I think that would be a good pressed metal plate victim. Victim's probably not the right word.
Yeah, it's a good point. I quite like the fact it's got its original dealer plates on it. I don't know why that should be a thing. I think it's just because, you know, you see ads for older cars. And if they've got, you know, a car from the 70s or 80s got its dealer plates on it, it's kind of, you go, ooh, originality.
It's the lack of molestation, isn't it? In fact, the Rover SD1... The Rover SD1 Barnfine video that I did on the Late Break show recently, that car had exactly that. It had a dealer sticker in the back window.
I saw that and I went, oh, that's a definite lack of... I can't say molestation. I keep thinking of mollusks.
Well, you can.
Molluscation.
I'm sure there is some car mollusking going on. I don't know what that would entail, but I'm sure it exists.
A Nissan S-Cargo, I suppose.
I totally want one of those.
Yeah, I kind of do as well. There's one that I see around near here, and I always look at it and go, that's just great. I mean, it's sort of silly, but that's why I like it. It's just a bit jolly, isn't it? It's a jolly car.
I'm down with it. I know we're going off subject slightly. I'll keep it quick. You know, because everyone's not going abroad anywhere.
Yeah.
Everyone's looking around for freedom.
Yeah.
I found myself this week doing exactly the same and getting a bit annoyed at the prices of even shonky long wheelbase ex-builders vans with potential are just daft money. And you're like, oh, come on. I want to find some sort of bad 70s motorhome that nobody's advertised yet.
I was just talking to a chap yesterday who casually mentioned that he's got a bit... He's got your disease because he's a bit of an eBay magpie and he'll have a drink of an evening and then the magpie comes out straight on the bay. Ooh, there's some old shite for going cheap and I'll get a bid in that. And over lockdown, he said, oh, I bought a motorhome.
Oh, what a stroker.
From
Scotland.
And they had to have it trailered down at great expense. There was all manner of aggro involved in this, and it finally turned up, and the truck was too big to unload outside his house, and he had to go around to a neighbouring street, and then someone came out of the house and went, are you dumping that there? And it all got a bit difficult for him.
So he was just
telling me all about this, and he went, no, it's great. I just always loved the idea of a real thing for old motorhomes, and this one was great. And I was like, oh, what kind of motorhome is it? And he said, oh, it's one of the GMC ones.
Oh, piss off. It's not the six-wheeler.
It's a six-wheeler, the short wheelbase, but still a six-wheeler.
Oh.
The GMC motorhome, which, for people who don't know, are those ones that look like...
They're front-wheel drive. They're glass fibre.
They're front-wheel drive because they've got the Toronado powertrain in the front.
They're flat floor. They're a seriously futuristic motor. I cannot believe he's got... basically my favourite motorhome. One absolute pants down, like, scrotal.
My favourite motorhome also, and I'm not really into motorhomes, but God, I'd love one of those. And I wrote a story for the Road Rat magazine last year about them, and their backstory is fascinating.
Brilliant.
I already loved them, and having to research it, I really fell in love with them and the way it was all done. And they, you know, it was such an ambitious idea that ultimately tanked.
Did it tank? I don't know.
Yeah, because it was expensive. They were expensive for their time.
Okay.
And
people just didn't bother.
Because GM thought they were really onto something, because motorhomes were huge in the States in the sort of late 60s, early 70s. It was a real sort of burgeoning trend, and they thought, we'll get a bit of this action instead of just selling chassis and engines to other people to cream off all the money. But it was signed off, that motorhome, by a guy called Ed Cole, who was also the man who's commonly regarded as the father of the Chevy small block.
Got quite a good form. Your mate who brought it down from Scotland, can you just tell me, is he bored of it yet, and does he want to sell it for what he paid for it?
It was absolutely, it looked terrible. Apparently it looked way worse in real life than in the pictures when it came off the truck, and his heart sank, and he had to clean moss off the windscreen before he could even see out. Which begs the question, how did they get it on the lorry? But it's actually cleaned up really nicely, and he's done a bit of work to it.
Oh, what colour is it? Is it brown?
It's sort of beige with brown stripes.
Oh my gosh, it's the best.
It's so 70s, but do you know how much he paid for it?
I bet he paid a reasonable... Did he buy it during lockdown?
Yeah.
I bet he paid a reasonable fee for it. 15?
15,000?
Yeah. 12?
I also want to tell you, because I think you might have a sort of a rage puke or something.
Don't tell me he paid about £4,000 for it, £3,000 for it.
£3,500.
Oh, shit off. And does it actually work?
Yeah, it does. Oh. Yeah, he's been away in it. Oh. I mean, it needs a bit of work to get it going, in fairness. He had to do a few things to it, but...
I'll give him six now. I haven't even seen it.
I don't think... He wouldn't take it. I bet you he wouldn't take it. He's been invited... Him and his family have been invited to a wedding in France. And if the lockdown rules will allow it, he wants to drive it to France. And that's, I think, happening later this year.
I think that'll cost him about £1,600 in petrol.
I know, but then he could get that money back by selling the motorhome to you for £5,100.
Does he want to sell it on the way back to me when his wife's bored of it and she's gone, hang on, so we could have stayed in the best hotel in Paris, but no, we stayed in a glass fibre porn dungeon on the outskirts of town.
I mean, that's the thing. They're very cool in the 70s way, but there is a distinct whiff of sort of brute sodden sex perverts about them as well.
I think, in some ways, in the nicest possible way, that there is the escapism of the specific era. So it feels like you're going on a camping holiday in 1978. And I kind of like that about it. Oh man, I can't believe he's got the actual campfire. It really got me onto a downer at the beginning of the podcast. Sorry. You absolute swine.
Do you know who else had? He told me as well, quite interesting, that one that he's got has lived most of its life in the UK. It was imported when it was quite new back in the 70s. I mean, they only made those things for sort of 3 or 4 years. So it came over quite early in its life. And it's not the only one, because in the 70s, the Hesketh Formula One team had one. Sodden sex pests. The Hesketh Formula One team had one as their motorhome.
Oh, that's... I bet it was its sign written. I bet there's some amazing...
I think it had the team logo on it. I've seen pictures of it.
Oh, gosh, that would be
James
so
Hunt
good.
Used it for James Hunt type business. So
James Hunt used it for just formula penetration. Exactly. We all know what may or may not have happened. We all know.
For warming up his rubber. Yes, where were we? What were we talking about? Oh, gel plates. Gel plates are absolute toss, and they make any car of any age look worse. And...
Yeah, bit questionable, aren't they?
It's just something we haven't discussed before, and I felt, particularly when the backing, the white or the yellow backing, is murky.
It is murky. Yes, I know exactly what you mean. It's tinted down.
Yeah.
I think it's to stop or to reduce the reflection or the visibility of it on AMPR cameras or Gatso cameras, I think. Because otherwise it just looks like, as someone was doing the lamination process, someone else was just sort of like sweeping up hair at a barbershop and just got a load of sort of small amounts of black hair clippings just fed into the... You know what I mean? It just, there's something about it that's not quite right.
When you were a kid, did you ever just turn down the contrast on the TV just to see what it looked like?
Of course you did.
Like, really? Well, back when TV sort of had either a big knob to do that, or it was just like, you know, it's quite easy to do directly off the remote without going to a menu.
Yeah.
And I used to do that a lot just to go, I wonder what this would look like if it was inexplicably much darker. And it looks like that. It looks like the contrast's been turned down too much and it just looks shit. But it can't be. That can't work either. That can't. There's no way that Fox's cameras, unless all the cameras are sort of from first generation smartphones, there's no way that they're not going to be able to read your plate unless it's nighttime.
I can't honestly see that it works.
Which just proves my supposition that people who put badly turned down contrast gel plates on their cars are cretins.
I think that they're a bit the kind of plate you'd expect to see on an unnecessarily aggressively driven car.
Yes.
They weren't on gel plates, but I had someone overtake the other day. All the roads around my house, the villages nearby, have all been gritted, you know, they've had chippings and pothole repairs done. So it's 20 mile an hour speed limit.
Yeah.
So I'm driving one of my kids back from swimming lesson, and we're doing about 20, 25, because it's been chipped. And this guy came steaming up behind me in a full-size Range Rover, like right up behind me. I'm in the Dodge, actually. I'm driving slowly. I'm in the Dodge, which is obviously quite a wide car for a back lane anyway in Britain.
Mm.
He's right up my back door, and he decides to overtake, like full kick-down overtake on chippings.
Oh. That's not cool at all, is it?
It was not
that's
cool.
Because you're then machine-gunning the other car.
And it was in one of my classics. I was furious. I nearly gave chase, but I didn't.
What an anus.
I know. That's what I thought.
Oh, speaking of twatty driving.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked before on this show about the Audi RS3 in particular.
Yes.
Tromboning about the place with its...
Oh, it's so much. Yeah, it's like the theme tune to Johnny Briggs, but with a GSG gearbox.
Now, on that side of things...
Yes.
A chap called Kevin Webb, who's one of our patrons, got in touch. When we mentioned the tromboning Audis with the DSG box, Kevin said, I'm a trombonist by training and used to teach it. I was amused by Richard's impression of a small child playing one at their first lesson. Trust me, as a former peripatetic brass teacher, lovely use of the word peripatetic there, it was spot on. But the clusterfuck of noise made by a class full of 39-year-olds playing their first school concert after half a term's worth of tuition is enough to turn a spectating parent to drink. In fact, the sound is much like the Morris Minor Owners Club setting off for a trundle through the countryside.
Do you know what? It's one of the reasons why I want to like the Morris Minor more than I do, but I feel constantly let down by the pathetic exhaust sound.
That's
like
funny.
Awful.
Because it makes me like it more. I don't know why.
Awful. Just makes me like the Beetle more. Far superior vehicle. Far superior the Zeppelin. Absolutely.
Talking of sounds, I know we did listeners' messages last week, and we're not going to spend the whole time doing that, but a chap called Simon Seymour Perry sent us a message asking, what's the most annoying car-related sound? I'll go first, he says. Hearing the sound of handbrake ratchets when someone can't be asked to press the button when parking.
I used to drive my dad nuts, that did.
My dad too. Yeah. I think it's because our dads are both engineers. It's mechanical sympathy.
It is. It's absolute mechanical sympathy. It's what it comes down to. Yeah. That is annoying. Well, I had to tap a... Somebody driving along with a totally flat tyre still bamboozles me.
I had it on
last Friday, which was exceptionally rainy, really quite stormy. And one of the school parents was driving out of school with a totally flat black back wheel, a tyre. And I tapped on the window and he said, yeah, I know. About the wheel. I went, oh, okay.
So if you know, why are you doing it?
I said, it is totally flat. Like, you're driving on the rim. Yeah, and he went, yeah. I'm just going to make it down to the fuel station, which is a mile and a half away. I went, are you going to drive a mile and a half like that? He went, yeah. I said, well, you're going to wreck your wheel, which is more expensive than your tyre. And he just went, yeah. I mean, honestly, it was a very interesting conversation.
That's a specific kind of yeah, isn't it? It's a sort of yeah. Like, I know, but I'm too much of a fuckwit to think my way around this.
Well, I can't. I mustn't judge. I mean, the weather was bad, so it was a bad day for a puncture. But I don't fully understand why you'd leave a safe car park to get onto a road to drive on a totally flat tyre. You're going to wreck your rim. You're obviously going to wreck the tyre, even if it was repairable. And it's sort of dangerous. I just didn't really understand it. I nearly said something about, like, I think you probably shouldn't do that. But then I thought, no, Johnny, rein it in. It's not your business. He's an adult. It's his car. Let him do it.
What car was it?
It was an Audi A3.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know, it's repairable.
Yes.
But then you'd say irreparable, wouldn't you?
Irreparable, you
it's
would.
Irreparable
yeah.
damage.
I love irreparable.
So is it reparable?
Yes, reparable.
Is this tyre reparable? Yes, I think we can repair it. It is reparable.
What about a reprobate? It's almost like a reprobate, isn't it? Is it a repairable bait?
No, reprobate would be like a reproduction version of a bait, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would be a reproduction bait. It's exactly what it is.
Yeah, mate. Is this original? No, I'm sorry, it's not. It's a reprobate.
It's a reprobate. Is it OEM? No. It's really not. Sorry about that.
I can't remember what I was going to say now.
Remember what we started to talk about, because that's such is the way with these podcasts. But I have got a letter from a lovely Patreon that got sent to... the old Smith and Sniff email address. Can I read it out? Because it's actually relevant to the presidential spec cars that we were talking about the other week.
Oh, okay.
This one's from Brendan McAleer. And he's a lovely guy. He's a Patreon, like I said, but he's quite active on social media. He said... Canadian President Trudeau does indeed seem to be the type to foist unwanted folk music at a gathering. However, I can share with you that his car is a bit interesting. A 1960 Mercedes Benz 300 SL Roadster. My friend restored it. Roughly a third of 300 SLs have been restored in Victoria, British Columbia, including a number of the aluminium bodied cars. Johnny might be pleased to also know that the same restorer loves a good Honda S600 and did a full resto on a Canadian spec roadster recently. The 300 SL belonged to Trudeau Senior, Pierre Elliott, who was the Canadian Prime Minister in the late 70s, early 80s. Pierre Trudeau would regularly drive it up to his upcountry cabin and absolutely cane the bejesus out of it in an attempt to shake off his security detail following in a Chevy Malibu or similar. He was frequently successful at ditching them. He also wrenched on the car himself. I always read that as being wrenched, but he was definitely wrenched, as in he repaired the car himself. He wrenched on the car himself, working alongside his mechanic. I would also point out that it's not particularly weird that the Ford GTs made in Canada, because it's the same company that build the chassis for the Aston 177 and the monocoque for the Valkyrie. Mm. Brendan, great bit of Prime Minister intel,
good.
Of personal car intel. I'm loving the fact that he was trying to shake off his own security people. Is it a punishment to give bodyguards and security cars that can't actually handle when they're because sure, does that mean you're actually trying to hinder their job, aren't you?
Yeah.
If you think about it, you go, is that car fit for purpose? I mean, is it? I don't know. But it's a bit like...
That's a good point, yeah.
Sometimes in the UK, we have security in things like Range Rovers, and I always think, as nice as Range Rovers are for many things, they can't really hustle, like, side streets, fast corners.
No, and I think I read somewhere, or someone told me, that one of the conflicting problems they have with these sort of security cars is that, you know, they need performance, they need a bit of handling to be able to get a sprint on going around corners as well, but at the same time they need to have lots of space inside because of gubbins, including
what, guns if, and ammo,
well yeah, those armed protection people,
yeah,
if they're all kind of kitted up.
Yeah,
we talked about this before. I mean, I think I said to you ages ago, it's like, have you ever sort of been near a modern police person? They're like, it's like standing next to a sort of robot. They're so sort of bulky. They don't fit down narrow corridors very easily.
No, they don't.
You know, sort of narrow corridor, and both parties trying to get passage to go side on. But if you're a police person in full kit, that doesn't help. You're as wide as you are deep. It's,
you just got me thinking about, imagine if one of those police people like asked to use your downstairs toilet in your house.
Oh my God. They would, you know, how
they'd never get out or in.
No.
Well,
they'd get jammed, wouldn't they? Because you have to sort of slide into the gap between the door and the sink, then close the door, and then you've got the room to walk down to the, you know, it's just
the
standard under the stairs bog.
I love your understairs toilet, but it's like all these places where you're trying to fit in a little corner basin or a little hand basin into a space. Sometimes these places, not yours, but other places where, you know, you actually, the door almost touches the pan as you open the door and walk in.
Yes.
You need to turn around, close the door without sort of hitting yourself. And then you've got to try, if you need a number two, you've got to sit on the pan somehow. And there's not a lot of leg room for such activities. But if you've got a police belt on...
Oh, you're just never going to... Well, because bad enough, ours is, you know, it's not... A mate of mine, he's redone their house now and fixed this, but their downstairs loo, you used to have to... Like you say, the door touched the loo. So basically you had to open the door as much as it would go, which was only sort of... shoulder width, if that, slide basically down the side of the loo, like cram your legs down the side of the loo so you could shut the door.
Or did you have to touch the pan with your trousers?
Yeah, you need to sit down, essentially, it was unsavoury. It was such a small room. And it was everything was sort of like slightly... It was weird as well because it was at an angle. There's nothing lined up properly. It was just awful. They fixed it now. But our kids, because they're little, had this thing. They've sort of stopped now where they used one of them to go to the loo and the other one to go, oh, I'm coming with you. He'd be like, don't go in there. But because of the way that the door blocks off half the room when you open it in our downstairs loo, inevitably one of them would sort of trap the other one. And it was like, just, no, go back and release your sister.
Yeah,
She's become distressed because she thinks she's trapped in a tiny room with a shitter.
My son still loves it. He still wants me to come to the toilet with him, but just for the chat. He's such a bloke. He's such a bloke. It's like, wait, what is it? And I said, I don't know. It's like toilet counselling. You know you're going to be there for a good 5 minutes or so. Just want a little chit-chat. I said, that's absolutely fine. It's absolutely fine.
Yeah, my boy does that, but he wants privacy as well, so he'll go, right, stay outside.
But chat.
Stay out there.
It's very specific.
So he'll either close the door, but you have to stand outside the door going, yeah, yeah, no, Minecraft, yeah, 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 whatever, yeah. Or he leaves the door open, but he wants the privacy, so you have to go, like, to one side of the door so that he can't see you. Which is...
it's just... People are funny, aren't
But then
they?
It makes the landing smell.
People are funny. No, that's the problem. If you do a door open session, then obviously, the air, there's a bit of a fug in the air. And the chances are the door will go and it'll be someone that you've never had in your house before, ever.
Oh, yeah.
Ever. And someone's cracked open a tin of Rotten Family Circle just before they walk in there. I mean, it's awful, isn't it? It's so many air biscuits. What do you do? You have to just go, oh, I'm really sorry. I've just dropped a...
Sorry, I just had a shit.
you just got to be honest, haven't you?
Now, just to change the subject slightly, Although,
yeah, please, can you?
Well, there's a couple of things I've made a note of to bring up today. One of them is, at what point are we going to admit that the new Peugeot logo isn't working?
I just really like the original one. I think that's
me too.
But it doesn't annoy me as much as the brand that didn't need to exist, Cupra. So I feel which is as you said before, it just looks like a sort of knockoff Disney superhero logo.
Or it's the logo for a new kind of energy drink or deodorant or something. It's just
it's deodorant, sporty deodorant.
Fire-X.
Yes, it won't
48-hour protection. Have a fucking shower. Why do you need deodorant for 48 hours, you stinky twat?
Well, because you're going to be sleeping in a Sprinter van at a festival with me and nothing but wet wipes and lager.
We're not.
It's so true. Oh, man. So true. That's going to totally happen.
No, it's not.
Oh, we've got a little email from a chap called Ken Long. Old email address, so that's why I'm reading it out. And the title is...
I like the demarcation of labour that's now happening. It's like, if you send it to the old email address, Johnny will find it. Send it to the new one, I'll do it.
Well, the title interested me. The title of the email is U2 and Flutes. And it says, long-time listener, guys, second-time emailer. Couple of quick snippets. Snippet one, enjoyed the aviation review with Smith and Sniff this week. My contribution to cool spots of the week would be the U2 that I saw flying back to Fairford a couple of months ago. That's a plane. Was really at the limit of my lens on my camera, but here's a quick bit of research shows that it was fitted with absolutely every eavesdropping pod available. Oh, it's like a reconnaissance plane or something. And the second snippet, which is a bit more relevant. Here's an idea for a Smith and Sniff game show segment, provisionally with the working title, Flute or No Flute. Listeners nominate automotive-related sightings, items, news for the jury of Johnny and Rich to rule on. I'm not talking obviously terrible things, but those that make you wonder, is that cool or is it a bit dreadful? I'm not sure. The idea came to me when I saw a black G63 G-Wagon, in brackets, flute, with a personal number plate, more flute points here, that read GG66GGG. I'm undecided as to whether this is flute territory or not. I'm wondering if the G-Wagon is owned by the same person who I saw driving a Ferrari FF recently with the registration F77FFF or similar. Anyway, keep up the great work, Ken. Thanks, Ken. You two and flutes. So... yeah, flute or no flute.
G-
I quite like
G66GGG. So
G6GGG.
Under the rules of twat plates, the 6 can be read as a G. So they want their number plate to just say GGGGGGG.
I think so, but I mean, I guess a G6 is a quite expensive private aircraft. So I mean, there could be connotations there.
Are they quite expensive? I did. One of those incredibly cheap private aircraft that people keep picking up.
Also known as a Microlite, which is a private aircraft. It's just not
what I was thinking.
I've got my own. Hey guys, I've got a sports car and a private aircraft. What you got then? Well, I've got a TR7. And I've got a Microlite. Oh, you man about town. You absolute swinger. Get you.
But if you were the lead in some kind of 1970s private detective show, a TR7 and a Microlite might actually seem quite
especially
cool.
If the TR7, if the Microlite went into a very aerodynamic, wide-tracked, Wolf Ray slot mag shod trailer, you can imagine that being quite cool.
Yeah, the only thing that's not cool for anyone is trying to reverse a trailer in a tricky spot.
Especially a very short one, actually. I find the short ones worse.
Yeah, it'd be even worse.
I tried to do it the other day.
They're getting away. No, they're not. Hang on, I'll just back out of this tight car park.
Sure, it was, actually. I remember when I finished filming an idle chat with Jason Plato and Matt Neal before Christmas, and I had I had that silly trailer on the gym with the silly brown chairs, and it was quite miserable weather. I drove into what I thought was a Starbucks drive-through and thought, okay, I really need a coffee. I was sort of falling asleep, and I wasn't. It wasn't a drive-through. It was a very, very.
It was just a Starbucks.
It was a very narrow, long car park with a dead end. It wasn't like a horseshoe shape. So I drove right to the end of the car park because there were no spaces, and then I realised I actually couldn't turn around. So I had to, in front of lots of other people, unhitch the trailer, disconnect it. Move the trailer around, then shimmy the jimmy around. It was a drive of shame. And actually, do you know what? Out of fury, I never went and ordered a coffee. I thought, do you know what? Screw you. I'm not going to get a coffee. And just drove out.
That'll show them.
Yeah.
How dare you have a narrow, badly signposted car.
Exactly. So I just, that was it. I just shimmied around, rehooked up, and drove off slowly because there's no other option in a jimny. Damn it.
Hey, I noticed last week I saw a news story somewhere on the internet of in Australia, where it seems you can still buy the jimny with four seats.
Uh-huh.
Of course, you can't here now, can you? That's only a commercial vehicle.
That's right, yeah.
Two-seater. But in the Australias, you can still buy a four-seater, and they've introduced a new sort of entry-level model, which gets the Steelies.
Oh.
And... oh, it looks nice.
The Steels are great.
The Steelies.
I might actually order a set for ours. There was.
I think the UK one now comes on them, doesn't it? Because it's technically a van.
Yeah, the SZ4. Yeah, SZ4 spec comes as standard on Steels. And I was thinking of getting them. And then what I do is, as soon as I've got them, I don't rely on the factory paint because they're usually just sort of dusted over because Steels don't get cared for. Taking them to my mate Tim, who did the Dodge steel wheels, and he just two-packs them in beautiful black. And then once he's done that, then I put the tyres on it. Then they're nicely two-pack protected.
Smart.
Is that a bit pervy or is it... or I might just...
no, I think you're all right there.
Yeah, I might do that.
Why not put three Steelies on it and leave one of the alloys on? That's a good look, isn't it?
Said no one. Said absolutely no one. Said,
because that way round, it's obvious something's happened and you've just got the nearest wheel that fits. If you do one Steely and three alloys, that's like, oh, that must be the spare. He's just had a puncture. He's put the spare on. But one alloy is it's the same as one mismatched alloy on a car with all alloy wheels on it. You just go, what happened? Why have you done this? Something else I was going to bring up this week. I've been meaning to mention it for ages. Do you ever just see sort of normalish cars, but in a certain kind of spec, where you just go, I bet that's a quietly nice car.
Oh,
I bet that's just nice.
Yeah, right.
So it's just shown up on our street recently down the end. Somebody's bought a fairly recent Mini, so current shape, but probably an early one of the current, in very low spec. And it's not got a contrast roof or anything like that. It's just red. It's got some quite small, simple alloys on it. No trimmings.
Obviously three-door.
Three-door. I think they had a three-cylinder engine in them, didn't they? I can't even remember. I just looked at it and I went, I bet that's really nice to drive that car.
Yeah.
I bet it's just... nice.
Yeah.
And down the road from us, near where some friends of ours live, there's someone who's got a modestly specced 2-litre petrol Jaguar XE.
Oh, interesting.
And again, I look at it and go, I bet that's quite nice.
I bet it's really good. Unfortunately, most people won't ever test drive it or think to order it. It's a shame, but... no,
and
I think
it's a nice looking car, and it's on a decent set of wheels, but they're not too big, and it's a nice colour, and there's nothing flashy about it. But and it's the 2-litre petrol, which I've never tried, but
that's Ingenium, isn't it? It's Ingenium territory. That
it's the Perineum petrol, and it's an automatic and
auto
Perineum ZF box, which is really nice, and so. I bet that's lovely.
Yeah.
But no one really would give it a second glance. And
no.
It's just sort of... and I was thinking, it's just... I love cars like that.
I think... sort of who are the people that...
underrated.
Who are the... what's the sort of governing body that tries to level out and decide residual values on cars? Is it CAP?
Yeah, yeah.
I think CAP should just rethink it. So instead of just awarding more points for people that just tick every box for the sake of it, because that's not very imaginative, people who actually really consider... things a bit more and a bit more creative, like Red Mini person that you've just talked about, it's not about necessarily ordering top spec of everything. That doesn't necessarily make it better. It's just more tasteful slash more interesting, a bit more characterful. The same with maybe, I think, captured mark people down who don't order interesting coloured cars, so we can turn this ship around for people ordering colourful, flamboyant, hued cars again. Can we not do that? Come on, people, let's do this. Nothing wrong with a bit of yellow, bit of orange, you know, bit of vibrant green.
I was on the Porsche configurator last week, or whenever they announced the new GT3 Touring.
Well, gosh, yeah, it was. Sex Touring.
And I was like, I'll just spec one up for my own amusement.
Of course
and
you will.
I was like, well, you know, maybe I should go full Chris Harris spec, bright yellow Touring.
Yeah.
Own it. Just, I mean, not literally, because they're expensive.
But, own it, apart from not
but
owning
I couldn't, because that new Touring has got one of the ways in which it differentiates itself from the regular GT3, apart from not having the big wing on the back, is that it has a little chrome strip around the side windows, which you can delete.
I hadn't noticed
but
that.
I think it looks really good. But I think it looks really good on a dark coloured car. Yeah, it's something you can put on. It's optional on any 911, I think. But I like it on a dark coloured car. I think it just brings a little pizzazz.
Chrome on like a supercar is almost a bit weirdly old school, isn't it? But I quite like it because you associate chrome with grand touring, don't you? And
yeah,
kind of glamour rather than out and out.
I think you can have chromey bits. Can you not have chromey bits on the McLaren 720S?
What, you mean the sort of chrome plastic piping that you put around all the indicators and all the door handles if you're a minicab driver?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So
just
self-adhesive.
One that circles a side repeater.
Just peel the 3M strip off and just wind it around everything.
I saw an old-shaped Golf yesterday, and it had the normal badging on the back that says Golf and stuff, but then they got some of those stick-on plastic letters that were in a typeface that doesn't quite match the VW typeface, and they'd taken some plastic letters next to Golf, they'd stuck on the letters DSG.
What?
Just to let you know what kind of gearbox it had got.
Yeah, dog shit gearbox. Yes, that's what it is. We all know a dog shit gearbox.
I like the little chrome line around the window, side windows of the 911 Touring, but I think it works best in a dark colour, so I ended up specking mine in grey, and then I thought, oh, would that be unimaginative? But I think if I was in the position
I'd have to buy one,
I would end up.
I'd have to go, Brett. I've said this before, it's kind of dull, but no, if I ordered that new GT3 Sex Touring, it would have to be. It's either macadamia nut brown metallic or chartreuse green. That's it. Job done for me. There's nothing in between.
Yeah.
And if it was brown, it would have the chrome. Because brown and chrome works.
That macadamia is a really nice colour.
It's a hell of a colour. It just keeps it keeps calling me like a siren in the night. When I say siren, I mean sort of sexy mermaidy woman. I don't mean like police.
Just like an alarm going off.
Yeah, that's what I mean, just so you know.
Well, it just keeps waking you up in the night and then you can't get to sleep again because you're too hot.
Well, you say that, actually. It's something that does keep waking me up. We bought one of those PE teacher-style stopwatches that you put around your neck because my wife's been training to be a referee in netball, and she needed one. And so we've got an 80s timer that you have has a string around its neck. But the problem is none of us understand the settings of it. And when it came, we just put it in the drawer with all the phone charges and all the usual shit. And the alarm goes off inexplicably at various times of the day. And I can't work it out. And someone threw the instructions away instantly. I've actually got it in front of me here. I just can't work it out. It's doing my Sweden. Can you hear this? Can you hear this? Hang on. Those are the very clicky black plastic buttons.
Clicky.
Yeah, oh, bollocks. I think I've wanked all over the split and reset. I think I've set up like six different splits then, so in the next hour it's going to start shouting at me.
Well, you've reset it now. It's going to go off every 20 minutes starting at 2 a.m.
That's exactly what it is. And nothing says pre-internet timepiece like an hourly chime that's very loud and you can't turn it off. Nobody has that anymore, do they?
Well, as a kid in the 80s, you'd go to the cinema and on the hour, there'd just be bip, 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 bip going on for actually about 3 minutes because no one's watch is quite set right.
I actually miss an hourly chime. I might get a watch which has quite an irritating hourly chime because I was thinking I need to get a bit fitter. I've got a bit... I've got quite unfit in the last 12 months. If I had an hourly chime on the hour every hour, whatever I'm doing, unless it's impossible, I get down and do 20 press-ups.
Yeah, if you're on the M5.
Yeah, if exactly.
And you're driving.
Yeah, if I'm doing a track day in a Caterham, obviously not. But
you could sling it onto the grass, harnesses off, out, as if there's an emergency with the car. Oh, God, something's wrong with Johnny's car. He's doing press-ups. You could just get a sort of smartwatch that would tell you to do that. But
no,
obviously that's more expensive.
No, I don't do smartwatches. I'm against them. I'm not going to feed that.
I've got a lovely old Casio. I mean, you know, it's absolute standard digital. It's not an F91, not the classic. It was sort of one model up. And I was wearing it just as my everyday watch for quite a while. And then I tucked it back in the drawer. And I got it out the other day. And the strap's broken. Like, it's just sheared in half.
Really?
And I cannot work out how that's happened. It's just...
If someone from Casio is listening to this, there's going to be a shockwave across the company, as in, a Casio has broken in some way.
No, the watch itself works fine. Because I said, I went, look at this, it's broken. How's this happened? My wife went, oh, just things break. I'm like, no.
They don't.
It's a Casio digital watch. Yeah. I paid, I believe, £11 for this.
Oh, sugar.
And... I expect it to last for a lifetime. But the watch itself works perfectly. And my wife went, well, it's just broken, isn't it? Just throw it away. And I'm like, I can't throw it away.
Oh, no.
It feels like, you know, burying a man alive.
No, you can't.
Throwing away a still-working Casio digital. I need to get a new strap, I guess.
Can I buy it off you?
Yeah.
And I'll put a commando strap on it, you know, a canvas.
Well, I looked at straps that I've got and none of them are quite... I think will work go on it, but I'll find another.
No, I'll happily buy it off you, and it'll be my working in the garage watch, and I'll put a commando style macho strap on it.
Okay, I'll just give it to you if you want.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Can I become a Patreon of you?
personally,
I'll pledge some Patreon money every month.
A pound a month. After 11 months,
I've bought the watch. Yes, can I do that? There you go, job.
That's quite a low depreciation watch, so basically you can get your money back even if it's broken. I mean, that's, you know, that's...
Well, don't tell Harry Metcalf or Quentin Wilson. Yeah, they'll be on it. They'll be all over it. Buy a Casio for £11. The next year it's worth £11. The year after that it's worth £11.
I got this Casio. It's white, ex-police, no sunroof, and I picked it up at auction for just £3. Now, window cleaning news. We talked about window cleaners the other week, and I said I'd seen a window cleaner in a comically small Fiesta van rolling an enormous spliff before.
Oh yeah,
presumably going to work. We've had some messages from window cleaners about this.
Oh gosh,
One of them is from a chap called Josh, who says he's a window cleaner in the Hartford and Essex area. He's 25, a petrol head, big fan of the pod, and listen to you every week.
Hey Josh,
I have a Mercedes Kitan with a 375-litre tank, which makes its own pure water when plugged into a water source. It's a very expensive system.
Oh.
Hearing about the Fiesta van man is very much what I separate myself from, and I like to be as professional as possible. It's interesting you talk about the future of window cleaning van-wise, because we carry so much water and my van has to be waterproof, which means fiberglassing the floor, but the odd leak does happen. So with a battery van, as all the batteries would presumably be in the floor, it couldn't be accessed with my tank. Furthermore, if there was a leak, I wonder if the batteries would get wet and cause problems.
No, they're sealed. They're waterproof, battery packs are.
Do you think? I suppose they must
be. They have to be.
But then I guess...
Which is why at some point I'll be doing some Ford driving, as in driving through water in EVs, because they don't need to breathe. You don't have the issue with inlet.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
So where's some cars snort up water, an EV won't. Obviously, if you drive it over the windscreen, then the interior might fill with water. But I wouldn't have any.
Are you allowed to talk about your recent experience of that?
I knew you'd say that. As I said it, I was like, oh, no. Yeah, I can. Because the video actually should be out by the time this podcast emerges.
Okay.
So last week,
in the last show, very exciting, you've got a Lada Niva on test. Tell everyone what happened.
Yeah, really, really excited. Had a 2021 Lada on test, got an exclusive on the brand new, still looks the same, is still kind of the same Lada, being sold by a guy in the UK. Really enjoyed driving one 10 years ago on fifth gear. It was one of my favourite features. So, got one in, going to do a drive in it, little bit of a Jimny comparison, and then I booked an off-roading quarry course nearby for some full off-roading. Very exciting, hottest day of the year. Filming it, did some road driving, film's going brilliantly, got the keys to the off-road course, no one's there, but I've had a phone call with the guy who runs it saying, yep, yeah, it's all yours, obviously it's hot day. There's a wading pool in the middle. So I was like, okay, so can I go in the wading pool? Is that all right? Yeah, yeah. Don't go on the left-hand side of the off-road area. That gets very clayey and boggy. No, I won't do that. I remembered this from last time. Don't go in the far left of the complex. I won't do that. It's fine. So anyway, we do all the stuff with the car clean. And then videographer Matty says, right, let's... Okay, I'm going to get the drone up. Let's do some epic drone stuff. I went, yeah, cool. I'll do some wading. Went down wading. Got me diff locked. Got me low range, obviously. I thought I'll just put it all on, the little Niva. By the way, the Niva's awesome. Can I just say this? Very enjoyable. Better ride than a Jimny. Definitely a better car than an old Defender. Sorry, Richard, not sorry. And just thoroughly enjoying myself in my Niva Lux, which costs £800 more than the base model and has electric windows and aircon out of a Renault. So I'm wading, and it is fairly deep, but I'm sticking to the middle because it looks like the way to go. And on this off-road course, there's big orange cones in certain areas which clearly you don't want to go because that might be dangerous. I go through the middle of the wading pool and the drone's got the footage. I think, well, that was quite deep. I'll probably do the side next time. That's about as deep as I'd want to go, despite the fact we haven't had rain for days. Bit more off-roading. It's all going very well. Car's indestructible. It's wonderful. Very Niva. I'm singing Rasputin on my way around because I'm having a lot of fun. I go through there's no cones on this bit that looks like the slipway into the wading pool. Okay, so it's at the side of the wading pool. And it looks like a slipway. And this is all on camera, well, on drone, certainly. I go along the side. I think I'll just tickle it along the side and then I'll go up onto some rocks and stuff. So I'm driving along reasonably fast because the water's about 2 inches deep max. And then it goes from 2 inches deep max to 3/4 of a metre deep. It's a bit like driving into the shallow end of a big swimming pool without any warning. And the car then just goes nose down. I immediately shut off the engine out of panic. I do try and reverse it actually momentarily, and then I realise it's not going to happen, so I shut the engine off. And it's very deep.
So hang on, at this point, well, I know this because you sent me a photo.
I did.
It's captioned simply FFS, I think.
Yeah.
it's and the new... The Niva was very nose down at that point. So I imagine the engine is, in fact, going... and snorting up.
There's
a water.
A warning light appears on the dash. The exhaust is out the water, so that's a good thing. But, yeah, I'm, like, going, oh, sugar, because it's definitely over the wading line on that car. So, yeah. And then I shut off. I haven't got comms with the videographer who's got the drone up. And then I start shouting and waving my hands and he realises that things are not cool. Comes running down from the hillside. And I'm like, I'm sinking. I can't get out. And so what happens is there's no, unfortunately, there's no onboard camera at the time. We didn't have the car rigged for cameras. But I have got a mobile phone in my pocket. And as the footwell and all of the pedal box disappears under muddy water, I film with my camera, my phone, what's going on. And I'm really annoyed and stressed because obviously it's a brand new car. It's got 300 kilometres on the clock of this bloody Niva, this beautiful Niva legend. And it's not owned by a big company. It's owned by a small guy who's importing them to order, Mark, who's wonderful, and he's very proudly let me have the first drive of it. This thing's box fresh. In fact, we were filming underneath it before we off-roaded it because it was virgin under there. Mm. So I'm upset. I'm worried I've damaged the car. And it's not my fault. It's not the... Well, it is my fault because I drove it in there, but there's no warning to say that it was. So I phoned the guy who organises the off-road bit, and I've sort of tried to describe... I need someone to come and pull me out. He said, they're doing the Land Rover experience. We're very busy today with all the Land Rover VIPs. It's going to be about 2.5 hours. I went, 2.5 hours? So all the filming's paused. I try and climb out. So I film myself and then I climb out through the boot because you can undo the boot. Well, you can only undo the boot from the inside on the Neva, just so everybody knows.
Wait, have you been in the car this whole time?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been sat in the car for about 15 minutes, 20 minutes trying to work out what to do. I've established it's not sinking any further, so that's good. But obviously the car is... The both footwells are full of water. And the back of the car is sticking up in the air like Titanic. I open the boot, which has extremely aggressive damp struts on it because it's brand new. It wants to shut really hard constantly, so I'm having to hold it open with all my strength. And I've had to get out. I've climbed out. I've managed to jump to freedom without getting my feet very wet, actually. And then we sit in the heat of the afternoon under a tree just going, what on earth? I hope I haven't killed the car. How are we going to dry it out? What's going to happen? Are we going to get any more footage? I'm very, very stressed out and running out of water as well. 2 hours goes by. The car hasn't sunk anymore. You'll see some pictures and you'll see the footage of the situation on the video on my YouTube channel. And yeah, the guy, lovely guy called Darren, comes and gets me in a two-door Discovery. And lovely guy, ex-forces, does it for a, you know, bit of a sort of hobby. And when he came and saw where I was, he went, oh yeah, nobody goes down there. I'm like, well, I said,
well,
I went down there because it looks like the slipway to get out. And he went, yeah, it does. You're absolutely right. I went, well, why is there no cone there? He went, well, this is the poignant bit. He went, hey, actually, I don't know why there's no cones there. But he said, thing is, a couple of weeks ago, Unimog got stuck there. I went, a Unimog?
What?
He went, yeah, one of our marshals has got a Unimog recovery vehicle with a crane on the back and it got stuck. So I said, well, look, if a Unimog gets stuck, that means a tractor couldn't get through, which means nothing can get through, which means I feel slightly better, but I'm still really annoyed about the fact I've got a box fresh Neva nose down in the water here. So he pulled me out with his two-door. We dragged it up to the higher
V8 grip. Or TDI?
It was TDI. It was nice. He's had it for quite a while. And he's a jolly guy. And he said, oh, I've got a toolkit on board. I said, I want to just check. I don't want to start this thing. I want to just check it's okay. So it was obviously pissing water out from the inside of the car. We checked. The air box was full of water. You know, the air filter, the paper air filter. So it had just... Mm. And I looked at the water line and it had just gone into the intake. And I was like, oh, sugar, this is touch and go. So he had a plug spanner. We took the plugs out. We spun the engine over with the plugs out. And it fired a bit of water on number one cylinder. Straight into his face. But he was actually really cool about it. He was quite excited. He said, oh, I'm glad we didn't try and turn the engine over now. So we span the engine over a couple of times more, plugs back in when it smelt of fuel, took the air filter element out and cleaned all the air box out. And it started straight away. No smoke, no steam. I was like, oh, good, good. And we managed to drive and carry on the feature. And I drove home, but without an air filter in the box. I can say this now because I know the car's absolutely fine. But the whole time, the engine management light was flashing and I was a little bit winky bum. Drove the car home, again, winky bum, engine management light out. The next day, knowing that the guy was collecting it on Friday, I thought, I had the headlights were full of water. The whole front of the car was full of mud. And obviously the inside was wet through, but luckily it's rubber matted and there's only a bit of soundproofing which soaked up the water. So I spent all of the next day pretty much, didn't think I would ever do this, on a 21 plate car. I took the entire front off the car, so I took the grill, the headlights, all the assembly around that out, cleaned it all. Dried all the headlights up. But that's the beauty of the Niva. It's a brand new old car, a bit like a Defender when they, like yours, it's still an old car. You can still do loads on it with just exposed screw heads on all of the dash. I took all of the interior out in like about 15 minutes. It was amazing. And the moral to the story is, obviously, don't go to an off-road course without any adults there. Because even an area that looks friendly might not be. The second thing I would say is I managed to, despite the fact that the air filter was all in Russian, I took it to a couple of auto factors and they were like, don't know what it is. But I managed to get a number, a code off the internet, and I managed to put a brand new air filter in it. And once I put the air filter in it and shut the air box down, taken the terminals off the batteries for 10 minutes and put them back on again, started the car up, no warning lights, it was absolutely fine. And I did double check the plugs the next day before driving it again, and there was no water anywhere. So the car was absolutely bob on. I gave it a thorough clean and obviously dried out the interior. And I love the Niva, but I was very worried I'd killed it. But I didn't kill it.
I was going to say, did you briefly start to wonder if you'd in fact just accidentally bought a Niva?
Yes, I did, because I got insurance on it for the shoot through Adrian Flux, and I thought I'm going to have to call them and do the whole, I think the car's ingested water and is dead, and therefore do I need to buy the car? What's the excess? Is Mark going to do me a deal on a car and I've got to buy a brand new Niva? I kind of said this to my wife, I think I'm going to have to buy this car. And I love the car, but obviously the circumstances are a bit dark.
Yeah.
So I was very scared. But I have to say, that car off-road is incredible. We didn't get all the footage we wanted of the off-road course because we spent most of the afternoon stuck in a very deep part of a wading lake. But I have to say, it's wonderful. It's just a wonderful, charming sort of ex-Soviet hangover with a smile, and you can order it base model. He's selling them under 12 grand plus VAT, and I just love it. I think it's wonderful, and the fact that it's left-hand drive only doesn't bother me because it's so narrow and the A pillars are so narrow. It drives really well, and it's more comfortable than a Jimny or a Defender. I kid you not.
I mean, I know that's not difficult when we speak.
It's not difficult.
There,
it's but, like, but yeah, so, yes, play, you know what I mean? No,
it's of the same genre, so that's the key.
Yeah.
So, I have to admit, that picture you sent me of the Niva nose down in that enormous muddy puddle, my wife WhatsApped me just after you'd sent it to me and went, oh, fucking this, I've got some aggro at work and blah, blah, blah. And I just forwarded it to her and went, you're not having as bad a day as Johnny is.
No. I know.
I will put that picture, if you don't mind, I'll put that picture in the Patreon show notes this week. So people who haven't seen can see it. It is, now we can say this now. I can say this now. It is actually quite a funny photo. But I can only say that because we know that it's had a happy ending and the car's okay and you're okay.
The car's okay.
You don't own a soggy, broken Niva.
No.
You've been forced to buy at Russian gunpoint.
But I want to say a big thank you to Mark Key, who runs larder4x4.co.uk, for lending me the car, for trusting me and being quite laid back despite the situation. And I hope hopefully the video's good. I mean, there's real jeopardy in it, as in we nearly destroy a brand new car. But not intentionally. Not intentionally. So
all right. Well, sorry, we took a bit of a detour there. Josh, thank you for your window cleaning email. I'll write back to you. We'll answer your other question, which is about buying a Z4. Quite a hard ride. Try one before you buy. Alexandros, as another window cleaner, also wears a polo shirt. uses a long brush known in the industry as a water-fed pole. He says electric vans are exciting, but the problem might be payload because water is heavy. Anyway, thank you for window cleaner messages. I think there was another one, but I can't find it now.
Water-fed pole, that is such an appeal session.
Water-fed pole. I know, and I saw one this morning, saw someone using one, and I thought, I know what that's called now, thanks to Alexandra.
Water-fed pole.
Thank you. Thank you to everyone who emails us, and we will come around and read out a load of messages at some point again soon, like we did last week.
Yeah.
But for now, thank you for listening. If you have got something you want to tell us, hello@smithandsniff.com. Smith and Sniff all in words, no ampersand in there. I don't think email address is
not allowed
very much, so just smithandsniff.com. And before we go, I have three things to tell you. They are, one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel called The Late Break Show, on which you'll find many excellent videos, including a test of a Lada Neva, which...
a water-sodden Neva.
The worst watery... fun with a Lada Neva. Two, I've got loads of books and things out. One of them is called Medium-Sized Book of Boring Car Trivia. It's available on Amazon as a paperback or an e-book. And the third thing I have to tell you is that the actor Jeremy Renner used to be a makeup artist.
Really?
Briefly, yeah.
Was he no good at it?
Before he got his break as an actor. I don't know.
Interesting. Sure. That is interesting, isn't it?
Well, anyway, there we go. That's that for this. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Rah-rah, Rasputin, lover of the Russian queen. It was a shame how he nosedived into a murky lake.